Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show with a guest that's been on previously, but I wanted him to come back because I think we have to do everything that we possibly can to take care of our bodies. And water is one of the most important things that we can do. It's imperative for life, for detox, for weight loss. I mean, the uses of it are endless. And I think we take it for granted. It's 70% of what we are. So if we're drinking things that shouldn't be in our system or adulterated with things that we don't even know, then I think it's time to take a look at the differences. And once again, we visit a product called Divinia Water. And we have the creator of Divinia Water, Mr. Steven Settlemyer, with us today. And it's an honor to have him on because I know how busy you are, Mr. Settlemyer. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for hosting me on your podcast. We love your work and we love to follow you.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Now, for those who didn't have the honor of listening to you last time you were on the show, I wanted to start off with what makes Divinia different. You know, there's all these bottled water and everybody's telling us how wonderful their water is, but you can actually prove the difference. And I just wanted to, you know, highlight why Divinia is so different and important.
There's so many aspects to this water that, quite frankly, we're still learning. But the things that we have identified is that it has a change. Now, first off, I should say it's ultra pure water. It has nothing in it except hydrogen, oxygen, and it's H2O or H3O2, which is called easy water or the fourth phase of water. So, but the elements that it has in it are the hydrogen and oxygen. And these elements combine to make a water that we recognize here on Earth that flows on the Earth is we call water. And a lot of times we call everything else water too, but water with arsenic we call water, water with radium in it, any type of radiation in it we call water. And we really should be differentiating that. So one of the things that we like to distinguish is this is an ultra-pure water. That's hydrogen and oxygen. That being said, the way that it forms its bonds between the hydrogen and the oxygen is different and unique than any other on the face of this earth. What I mean is that there's different vibrations in water. A lot of people refer to these as memory of water, but the vibrations are what actually create the bond between the hydrogen and the oxygen to form water. And when you have other elements in it, whether it's arsenic or radium or uranium or magnesium or calcium or anything else like that, they alter the vibrations and actually change it, so that you have a different form of water. Again, going back to our water, it's ultra pure. There's no parts of anything else in it. No biologicals in it, nor non-biological. No carbon, nothing. And so that vibration between the oxygen and hydrogen over the years has been established by several things here on Earth. The electromagnetic radiation that the earth emanates, the magnetic field, also the magnetic field of the sun and the radiation from the sun that sweeps and hits down on us, the UV radiation, the light, the IR radiation, the visible sunlight, even the moon circling around the earth creates this resonant vibration, and it's given us the form of water that most people are aware of today. That arises a question: is this water the same as the water a million years ago, or 2 million years ago, or even 3.2 billion years ago? And the answer to that is Probably not. In fact, there was an article that was published a couple of days ago that actually supports what Dr. Gerald Pollack found about the fourth phase of water, or what he calls easy water, that they found that water under different pressures and under different EMF fields form a different lattice or structure that functionally are different than the water we know today. And in fact, that's how I started looking into this water, because this water behaved strangely from other waters that I knew about. And I contacted some material scientists, specifically Dr. Russum Roy, and we studied the water with something called Raman spectroscopy, and we looked at the resonance in the bonds and found out that it was different than other waters. That's just one aspect of it. Another aspect of this water is what Dr. Gerald Pollack found, and he found out that it has a different vibration at a different frequency in it that indicates what he calls the fourth phase of water, or the type of water that we actually have in our bodies. And in our bodies, the water is confined by very small spaces, the cell, which is typically about 377 millionths of an inch across. So it's very tight spaces. And the intercellular spaces between different cells are also very small. So the pressures there are greater and the spaces are smaller. And what they found, what he found out, and many other scientists are now just finding out, is that this also creates a different type of unique water that's different than the type of water you drink. And now they're surmising that this same water, the super ionic water, they're calling it, is the same water that might be on Uranus or Saturn or Neptune or some of the other planets in our solar system. And it would not be the same as the water here. It will be very different than the water here. And you might ask, well, how can that be? Water is just hydrogen and oxygen. But the way the hydrogen and oxygen form together creates a unique substance. This can be seen in carbon. When we talk about carbon, we talk about graphite. We talk about coal. We talk about diamonds. All of those are the same things. They all have carbon in them. They all have carbon bonds, but the way the bonds form, whether they're planar or three-dimensional or two-dimensional or whatever it is, makes a different type of substance with different materials and or different material properties. And therefore, science has proven and knows about different forms of an element form different substances. And that's what we've done with this Davinia water. We have actually formed a different type of water. Along with that process, our water is something called deuterium depleted. Naturally, all waters on the face of Earth have a radioactive hydrogen in them. It's called deuterium. There's deuterium and tritium. And deuterium is also known as heavy water. It has an extra neutron in it. And so it's heavier than the regular hydrogen that only has one proton in it. And when you add another neutron to it, it becomes heavier. And that acts differently in the body, too. In fact, too much heavy water will kill you. The normal heavy water that we have today on Earth, because of the radiation that we've created and bombardment and what the Earth has contributed to, that particular amount is 156 parts per million. And deuterium is known to slow biological processes. It actually prevents biological processes from happening. And by depleting that amount or removing a certain amount of it, it then helps the body do better biological processing, and it helps lead to a better health in a human being and animals and plants and everything else.
On that note, let's take our first break, because I think you just set up the table for how important it is. Whatever goes in your body really does matter. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back, or we're speaking, sorry, with Mr. Stephen Settlemyer. And before the break, you did a wonderful job of setting the stage for what makes the Davinia water so important. I mean, I never really realized, I don't think anybody really takes into consideration how the environment affects the quality of food and water that we drink. You know, as you said, we're being bombarded now with EMFs, whether that's from towers or electronics, things that are being, various factories being polluting the water system. And, you know, we didn't even talk about things like that are added in to help clean the water, like municipal water, like chlorine and that sort of thing. I mean, Davinia doesn't have any of that stuff in it. And I can imagine how much work the body has to do to overcome everything that goes into it. Now, when you describe the deuterium depleted part of the water, and you know, we're energy, you know, we're batteries essentially. It seems to me that if you're drinking water that's not structured like this is it really able to get into the cell? I mean, are you really hydrating yourself with typical water versus Davinia?
Well, and that is an extremely cognizant and great question, because a lot of people want to know what hydration is, and there's been a hard problem defining what is hydration. I have my own definition of it, and the definition is for a cell to be healthy in the body, 1 million molecules of water per second must flow through each individual cell. And you think 1 million molecules, that's huge amount for each cell. But in reality, 1 million molecules will fit on the head of a very small pin itself. And so in size, it's not very much. And to get into that cell and flow out of the cell, it has to pass through something called an aquaporin gate. That aquaporin gate is, again, in the electromagnetic field created by the lipids and the water, the aqua in the cell itself, that only allows pure water to go through. And hence the term the easy water, the exclusion zone, or the fourth phase of water. Because what Dr. Pollack found out in his research is that the water that's closest to a hydrophilic surface actually is very pure water. It's in you picked up on the battery aspect, because water is a battery, and it's actually the battery that makes each one of our cells function. It's not the food that we eat, it's the water that we drink. And this water near a hydrophilic surface actually has a higher density of protons in it than what is called bulk water. Now, I'm not talking about great distances, but there's not great distances in the body either between the cells. We're talking about a few millionths of an inch in these things. And when that water gets close to a hydrophilic surface, protons are attracted to it and electrons are repelled, therefore creating a differentiation between the EMF field in the water, which gives it a charge. And that charge is acceptable to flow through and is the right shape to flow through the aquaporin gate, which is very much like a keyhole, but a magnetic keyhole. So water flows through that. And as it approaches each one of the elements or the molecules in the cell itself, it actually gives a charge to that chemistry to be able to allow the reaction to occur. In another research that another person did, they found out that the barrier for the concentration, the barrier for a chemical reaction is lowered by a differentiation in the charge. As you probably know, all chemical reactions have this barrier they have to cross for it to take place. And for that to take place, you have to add energy. Well, the water itself, because it has undergone this charge separation, has that barrier, has that energy to help the chemical reactions in our bodies to do the reaction. And it's actually the thing that gives the mitochondria the energy to do the ATP reaction, which causes the energy for you to go on in your life cycle. It also is the same water or the same molecule of water that carries out the trash that's left over from chemical reactions in your cells so that it flows through your kidneys and through your liver so it can be filtered out and you either urinate or you defecate the trash out, essentially. So it removes the byproducts that are harmful to the cells out of the cell. Now, when that doesn't happen, then the chemical reactions are mutated, and those mutations can actually, we believe, turn into cancer or other sickness or illness or inflammation. In fact, inflammation is probably the real definition of inflammation, is that a cell is not functioning properly, and the byproducts of the chemical reactions that have occurred in that cell are not happening, and they're inflaming the cell. And when you think that there's, again, a huge amount of number, but they estimate that in 1 second, there's probably over 1 million chemical reactions happen in each cell in your body, which is just mind-blowing. I mean, We can't even comprehend that each cell in your body has to go through 1 million chemical reactions a second to stay healthy.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. I mean, it's far beyond anything that we can even comprehend. It's like looking up at the night sky and knowing that there's 1 million solar systems out there. And each one of those solar systems have 1 million stars in them. And of those 1 million stars, you know, so you're talking about 1 million times 1 million times 1 million that we can even see right now. And that's kind of what your body is doing on a very nano scale. So on one scale, we have something extremely small that we can't comprehend. And the other end, we have something extremely large that we can't even comprehend. Somewhere in between, we live that. We're living that dream somehow.
I mean, if you think about if you extrapolate what you just said, it's amazing that we're able to stay healthy, to live on this earth as long as we do. With all the things, the insults that we put in there, you're talking about someone who drinks a lot of clean water, energy, infused water. Most people don't do that. They're drinking carbonated soft drinks. They're drinking alcohol. They're drinking or eating things that are toxic and have all sorts of chemicals in it. It's incredible that the body's able to overcome that, balance us, keep everything balanced and moving so that we can exist. And I mean, I'm a big fan of help the body and it'll help you, right? So if give it what it needs, it can do the job of detoxing, of keeping us here alive and healthy and active. I mean, it really puts a different take on it. I don't think we should take for granted all the things we need to do to help ourselves anymore. There's too many things out there that are trying to thwart us. We need to actually take our power back. Now, I know we're going to take a break in a few minutes, but I wanted to go back to the beginning of, you know, I know that you've come from NASA as your baseline training. How did you move from that? And we're going to probably have to get your first take on it and come back and pick it up after the break. But I just wanted to start that conversation because you created a company that's really outside the box. How did this all get started?
When I was young, I was the youngest to get a National Science Foundation grant at the time for Arctic and Alpine research, which today we call environmental heating or the environment of the Earth. But we started looking at the changes in the Arctic, and I was 15, 16 at the time, still going to high school and taking some college courses too. And then I went to work for a company, Martin Marietta, in theoretical mathematics and spaceflight mechanics, because I was extremely interested in math, and it got me very interested in how math might apply to our world. And even though it was theoretical, I was more interested in the application of it. And from there, I started a company when I was 21, 22 years old, 23, that did instant replays and scoring systems for sports arenas. And back then, I have to put a time schedule on this. I'm 73 years old, so that was over 50 years ago. I started a company that was doing instant replays for sports arenas, and they were using basically black and white bulbs to do that. I thought there was a better way to do it. Fiber optics was a new field, and so I created a fiber optic instant replay board. In fact, I'm the first one to create a display with over 1 million pixels in it. And back then, there was 50, 60,000 pixels in a scoreboard or an instant replay, and I was doing it with 1 million at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it with color. And along the way, I invented a laser projector that did it. So I was one of the first people to use lasers to make a display. And we shone that into the fiber optics, and I had intended for that. And it was a very thin display. This was a 8 by 10 foot picture, 1 million pictures on it. At the time, it was only about 6 inches thick. And I had other patents and other things whereby I was going to make this thing weigh 40 pounds, be less than half an inch thick, and weigh on your put it on your wall, which got some foreign companies very interested in it. We went through a big patent lawsuit where they stole the technology, paid millions of dollars to steal from it, and that sort of thing. And by the time it was over, I did sell those rights to the foreign companies because no one here was interested in it. None of the companies wanted to pick it up. And it was a time of when everybody was talking about globalization, where they wanted to move all the manufacturing out of the United States to foreign countries. And I was running around trying to make sure that the manufacturing stayed here in the United States, which was an uphill battle. Eventually, they licensed that technology, and I semi-retired at that point. When I semi-retired, my wife was what I like to refer to as a water snob, and I was just a scientist that didn't care much about water. I thought water was water, and I had not ever looked into it because no one was really looking at water at the time. Everybody just took water for granted. You know, the government gets water, they buy it at a cheap cost, and they ship it to you, and you drink it. And so after finding, after looking at this distiller that we bought to clean the water, it kept breaking down. And what it was, a couple prongs, just like in your heater, that got hot to turn things to steam, cooled it down, water. And I looked at those things, those elements, and it was eaten right through those things. Now, this is pure metal that's eaten through in about, some of the times it would eat in 3 or 4 days. And I was even worried about, where does that metal go that it's eaten through? It's got to be going in the water that we're drinking. They're calling this clean water.
Mr. Shuttlemeyer, I gotta take a break here and pick that thought up when we come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. I'm sorry to have cut you off prior to the break, but you were talking about your water system and how it was corroding the metal, and obviously didn't even realize what you were drinking, but please pick up where you are, because I don't think people realize it. They just think it's clean, it's perfect, but you just described how one method that it can be adulterated, you don't even know it.
Well, yeah, and this is at home purification. This is mm-hmm. not even what the cities or anyone else did. So I invented a way to purify the water in a Pyrex glass vessel by emitting electromagnetic fields into it with nothing touching it. And so I came up with this system, but the water behaved strangely. It was not doing what other waters did. It was, it seemed like thicker water, although it wasn't. But it flowed differently. It made plants and animals healthier. It grew them differently. They got bigger. We tried fish with it. The fish were extremely healthy and grew to bigger sizes than normal and lived longer. The plants were getting bigger, and they weren't as not worried about the drought or the heat or the cold as other plants were. People started getting healthier. And so I decided that I would take this and I'd try to find out what was different about this water, why it was different. The other thing it did too is dissolve plastic. I could not put this in plastic containers. And I found out that the hard way by putting this water in some plastic bottles that were other water bottles by other large companies, and it dissolved those. And so I thought, well, this could be dangerous. That's when I started testing them on plants, fish, and other animals, and found out those things got healthier. So I contacted a material scientist, probably the world's most famous material scientist, Dr. Rustam Roy, and he got very interested. When I showed him how I did it, he said, "My, I've been trying to do this for 20 years, and you came up with this method." So he took it back to Penn State University, and also while he was at Arizona State University, tested the water with something called Raman spectrometry. And when we did that, we found out the difference in these bonds that were in the water. So along the way, we found out this was different water than was on the face of the earth. And possibly this might have been even what we called ancient water. Why I say that is in the Bible, if people read the Bible, they'll find out that they talk about ancients of old that lived 900 years, 1,000 years old. And it seems as people from ancient times towards our times, their lifespans kept decreasing. And there must have been a reason for that. I actually contributed to the water, as you said. So this got me extremely interested in water, and I started studying water. And this is when all the different aspects come out. I also understand why cities have to do what they do, but they essentially put a poison into your water, chlorine and fluoride, so that they have to kill the biological leftovers from a lot of things from where they process, which means they remove solids from the water. And those solids then have to be buried in the ground somewhere. But what they do is they remove the solids. They try to remove as much biologicals as they have. So they have to actually dope your water with huge amounts of chemicals to kill those things. And then they transport it through a pipe to your house. Along the way, that pipe is contaminated. It's usually a lead pipe, if it's not a newer pipe. So it carries lead with it. Or tree roots break into it, or it gets crossed with the disposal water from your toilet or something. You know, there's a million reasons why. And so they have to have enough of these chemical agents in it to kill any biological function between where they process the water and your house. And then, of course, when it gets to your house, you drink the water without removing all that stuff. So you're drinking the biological agents that kill biology, which is chlorine, fluorine, and a lot of other different things. And when they treat that water, they treat it with chlorine and fluoride. And those things cause another chemical reaction, which kills the biologicals. But they also create another chemical that actually is cancerous and is not removed and you drink in your water too. So, and that's just the nature of large cities and a lot of people crowding around together. And everybody takes water for granted. But without water, whole civilizations have collapsed. And so we have to keep water flowing for a lot of things, for showers, for toilets, for drinking, for eating. And in fact, I was consulting with a company in Florida where they wanted to start a new city and they wanted to base it on clean water and how they would do that. And I told them, that's a little impossible because if you clean your water to such a state as we do, then it would actually degrade the pipes between where they cleaned it to your house because this is a very aggressive water and it removes contaminants. That's what happens when you drink our water in your body. It's removing the contaminants into their own filter system, your liver and kidneys, so it can be removed. So, but drinking tap water, you're putting contaminants into your body. And in fact, they're cancer-causing contaminants that you hope that your body is not overloaded enough it can remove. But for that to do that, it takes energy. With our water, when you take it in, it's already cellular. It's already cleaned. And it takes no energy to create it. And in fact, it helps chemical reactions. So you're actually adding energy into your body instead of taking away. When you drink normal water, you're actually taking away energy from your body because your body has to purify that somehow so that it can go into the cells. So if it doesn't, then you get inflamed. You have other problems.
Well, so I want to actually ask you about bodily functions, digestion in specifics, or specifically, I should say. How does water, especially Divinia water, enable our bodies to digest? Because honestly, if you can't digest your food, you can't run. Your body will not run. Just like you need to be hydrated, you need to be able to take in nutrients. So how can Divinia facilitate that?
Thank you for asking that, because as you probably know, I wrote a book on that. But what's very interesting, why alkaline water is very dangerous for you, is when you eat your food and you masticate it, and which means just grinding it up, and it goes down your esophagus into your stomach. Your stomach is the first place that actually starts tearing those proteins down into amino acids. It rips everything apart. And to do that, it uses enzymes. Those enzymes have to be in a very narrow range of pH or acidic. And it needs the acid to be able to digest or start tearing those proteins apart. And so your stomach is very acidic. In fact, it's more acidic than the battery in your car. And that acidity is what the proteins work in a very narrow, very, very narrow range. And those enzymes are which helps you digest your food, to take all the proteins you've just eaten, the fats, the lipids, everything else, and start breaking them down so that it can move into the next part of your body. So when you drink water that is not neutralized or it's alkaline, it actually stops the digestion of your food. The food moves along in your intestine. Your intestine doesn't know what to do with it. And it looks like inflammation to it, and you don't digest your food properly, and it can actually create something called a leaky gut. So the other thing you don't want your water to do is have this chlorine and everything else in it, because the chlorine then inhibits digestion of food. So do other things like arsenic, radium, all these other things that are in the water that you drink. Stops the digestion of your food. So what you want is a neutral water that can change to either acidic or alkaline, depending upon what your body wants it to do. And one of these things that you don't want is you don't want buffered water. And that's another thing that's not talked about very much, is most water is buffered. They don't want the pH to change. And pH might mean the power of hydrogen. That's one suggestion of it. And that's why water is important, because the hydrogen is very important to your body. And so by this buffering of it, and you can tell because swimming pools have buffered water, because when it rains, they don't want the pH to change, because then it has algae growth and everything else in it. They want the water to stay clear. So they buffer the water so that other things don't change it. And a lot of our water today is buffered. Our water, Davinia water, is not buffered. When you drink Davinia water, if the environment is acidic, it changes to acidic, and it does it very rapidly. If it's alkaline, if you need an alkaline environment, our water changes to alkaline, and it's unbuffered also. So when you digest your food, the first thing that happens is enter your stomach. And when it enters your stomach, as I said before, the proteins are broken down into amino acids. Your body doesn't like proteins for you to enter the bloodstream. It likes amino acids. The amino acids are then processed and delivered to the liver. And the liver then reassembles the amino acids into the proper proteins that your body needs for whatever, for energy, for building muscles, for thinking, whatever. And it knows what proteins it needs. It doesn't like pre-made proteins entering the bloodstream. Again, that's what we call inflammation. And again, that's disease. And that can lead to, as you know, very dire consequences. So for water to work properly and for you to take fluids in, the whatever fluid you take in, and it should be water, should be unbuffered, and it should be extremely pure, and it should be pH neutral, so that it works with your body for your body to function normally. Any abnormal function of the body is inflammation, and inflammation is a disease of the body. And it all starts with water. The water is the one of the main key controlling elements of your health. And it should not have chlorine in it, should not have fluorine in it, shouldn't have arsenic, shouldn't have radium in it, should not have calcium, magnesium, none of those things in it. Your body will do what it needs to do with the water and with the food, and it will heal itself.
I think that's the best explanation I've ever heard of why it matters, what the pH and alkaline versus carbonated versus whatever, water. I think you just described it brilliantly. Now, on that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Stephen Settlemyer. And Mr. Settlemyer, I know you, in the last segment, you talked about your book. How can people buy that?
It's on Amazon right now. If you look up Water and Digestion on Amazon or my name, you will find the book there, and they publish it.
Okay. Well, people definitely need to do that. I think we spend so much money on antacids and GI issues, and I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor, so I know that the GI tract and the nose and throat are very much aligned. As the GI tract goes, it causes problems in my area. So I think if people can, and obviously the immune system, 70% of it is in the GI tract as well. So that's a really huge foundation. If it works properly, I think that's the foundation for health from what you described. And now I wanted to segue into something that I didn't know about that you're involved with. And it's about the Shroud of Turin. I'm just curious to know how you got involved with it, and what are you doing along those lines now?
Well, my life has actually led up to the investigation to the Shroud of Turin, whether I knew it or not, is that every experience or every work that I did gave me a little bit of knowledge about what I would need to study the Shroud of Turin. I heard, and I've known about the Shroud of Turin for a long time, and there's a lot of controversy over it. It is a linen that was created from flax seed. Linen is from flax. And it's a burial cloth of a man. I'm purporting that as the burial cross, the burial shroud of Jesus Christ. And there's some controversy about whether it was or not. And one of the problems is the carbon dating from it. And to be able to do carbon dating, you've got to do destructive testing. You've got to take pieces of the material, cut it up, burn it, and then look at the burnt ashes or the carbon that's left over, and you look at the ratio of C14 to C16, and that gives you an age of when it was no longer living as versus a living matter. And that causes great consternation to be able to cut up something like the Shroud of Turin. And when they went to test it the first time, what they did is they took some material from the edges of the cloth that might not have been part of the original cloth that were put on it at a later date in the 1200s or 1300s because of a patch that was created because of the fire of it. And there's other problems with it. How did that image get there? Nobody knows. There's no paint. There's no material that was ever put onto the shroud. The image just miraculously appeared there. And the way it was created is another thing that nobody can understand at this point, is that it's as if every cell on the skin itself had a mini laser beam connected with it that emanated light in a coherent unidirectional fashion that intersected the shroud around each individual cell on the surface of the body. And of course, we can't even begin to comprehend that. And somehow it's changed the chemistry in the bond of the material or of those elements that were between the body and the shroud itself. And of course, the only way that you can see the image is that you have to look at the negative of the image. It's not a positive image, it's a negative image. And it's only on the surface between the body and the contact of the linen itself. It's not on the outside linen that's exposed to the air. In fact, it didn't even travel through to it. It only occurred within a few nanometers of the first linen in the strand of linen. So it doesn't go through, in fact, it doesn't go through the entire strand. It just goes through a couple of the individual strands of fiber that make up a whole strand. And also there's the problem with the pollen on it. There was something like 138 different pollens on it. And so there's all these questions, and I can get into more and more. It's the deeper you get, the more enigma it turns out to be. And the problem is people wanted to try to do the testing, but as a sacred image, a sacred piece of material, you don't want to destroy it to find out what it is in the first place. And that's where my life experiences have led up to this, because I've had a lot of expertise in laser projectors and forming images that are coherent images. I've done non-destructive testing, and I found out about the bonds and what you can find out with Raman spectroscopy. So after hearing this podcast, I decided I would approach some of the authors of the books and of the written chronicles of it, that I would propose a way to do testing of it. And my proposal is to build a big scanning bed. And this big scanning bed might be like your desktop scanner where something moves underneath it. But we would stretch the shroud out on a platform, build this big scanning bed over it, and we could mount all sorts of different things. Like, we could mount different cameras on it, and I could actually scan the entire shroud of it with a high resolution 100 gigabyte camera, and move it every 3 inches or 6 inches and take a picture, and then stitch that picture together very much like they do with the James Webb telescope that they're doing now to create a high definition image, which has never been done before. The other thing is, I could mount a Raman spectrometer on this, and I could look at any part of the image anywhere, and by doing a non-destructive Raman surface test on it, I could tell you what type of material it was, what elements are in that material, tell you what type of bond it was, and how old it is. And in carbon dating, they have never done this before. And I contacted a couple of the manufacturers of the Raman spectrometers themselves and asked them if they've ever done it. And they said, no, it never occurred to us. But yes, we can distinguish between carbon-14 and carbon-16, the amount of particles. And they do this with a laser that shines down, a very weak laser that shines down, hits the material, and it resonates. And by that resonance, you can look at how strong different bonds are and what the signature is for that element. And that's what I did with the water, to find out that the water was different than any other water. And by doing that, we can do carbon dating on any part of the shroud, any part, to a thousandths or even maybe a millionth of an inch resolution. I can tell you what type of blood it was, what was in the blood, everything on it. And so I'm making this proposal to the people that are part of the team that tested the shroud.
Well, you know, so, when you get this, I would love to have you. I mean, time comes so fast on the show. I want to have you come back. So when you do get to that point, I'd love to know what the results are. But time goes too quickly. I just want to make sure people know how to reach you, how to buy the Divinia water, how to read your books.
Yeah, if they go to www.divinia.com, you will find out more information, and you can order from there. As far as my book, if you go to Amazon and you look up Stephen Settlemyer, you will find my book under that. And my name is Sedlmayr. Or if they look up the book, the title of the book, Digestion in the Water, and the Water and the Role That Water Plays in Digestion, they will find it on there too.
I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It explains a lot more about the water than I've been able to explain. The book is called The Digestive Process and the Role of Water in Digestive Health. Digestion Explained with How Water Affects Digestion and Health.
Sorry, the show is too short. I definitely want to have you come back on, but I want to thank you so much for your time. I learned a great deal, and I know that I'm on the right track, so I'm going to continue to drink the water and continue to feel as good as I do. So thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.